You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romanticy podcast book club. I'm Christina, joined by my book besties Kim and Anna, and together we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books. Hi, book besties. Welcome to ACOTAR Revisited, our deep dive back into the series that started it all. We are so excited to be here discussing A Court of Wings and Ruin, the third book in the ACOTAR series by Sarah J. Maas.
Woohoo! Woo!
And just a reminder, we will be breaking up each book into multiple episodes so we can take our time with this incredible story. Now, with that being said, and because we have read this series multiple times, we will be discussing each book with the knowledge of the entire series. But before we give our official spoiler warning, Christina has some announcements.
I sure do. So first of all, thank you so, so much to everyone who has taken the time to rate and review the show. That is so helpful to us and we so deeply appreciate it. If you have not had time yet, please take a moment to do so. We are sending you a big hug and a big thank you for doing that. Also, yes, we are discussing ACOLWAR today, but as this episode drops, it will officially be Brimstone season, the highly anticipated sequel to Callie Hart's Quicksilver. And you know what that means, book besties. It is chapter chat time over on Patreon, our real-time read-along reaction videos. We know you guys love it when we get to do these for new releases, and we are so, so thrilled to get to bring you them for Brimstone. Also this month over on Patreon, we have a book club chat covering Slaying the Vampire Conqueror by Carissa Broadbent, an SJM episode covering Bryce and Hunt from Crescent City, and so much more. We've got two tiers starting at $5 a month, something for everyone, and we would love to welcome you into our Patreon family. So come join the fun at patreon.com/flightsoffantasypodcast.
Yes. All right, listeners. So consider this your official spoiler warning for the entire ACOTAR series. That's A Court of Thorns and Roses, A Court of Mist and Fury, A Court of Rings and Ruin, A Court of Frost and Starlight, A Court of Silver Flames. Let's go. All right. So, okay. Where we left off from last week's episode, Rhysand, Feyre, Azriel, and Mor have just returned from the Hewn City, where they were meeting with Kyr to ask for his help in the upcoming war. Mor is very upset because of the deals Rhysand sneakily made, without really talking with anyone about it, with both Kyr and Eris. And Amryn has been trying to defuse the situation. And this brings us to where we are picking up this episode. Christina, will you take it away?
I would love to. Let's talk about Amryn, our tiny ancient one, full of mystery. So this is when she finally really opens up about what she truly is. She explains that she came from another world entirely, Maas versus anyone, something ancient and unknowable before she took a physical body in this world. She was a creature of pure power, without pain and without emotion. As she puts it, quote, "I was perfect, according to some. I did not regret, did not mourn, and pain, I did not experience it." Oh my God. But even then, she was different, curious, questioning, never quite like the others. As we discussed last week, much like Nesta, she did not fit the mold. And so when a rip in the world appeared as Prithian was being created, it was curiosity that pulled her through it. And when we sit down to really deep dive this, what's so striking is the sacrifice that she made to stay, that she was willing to make that sacrifice to stay. Because what she says is, quote, I yielded my grace, my perfect immortality. I would feel pain and regret. I would want and I would burn with it. I would dot, 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 fall. Ah. Oh, wow. The religious undertone.
Seriously.
Like Easter eggs are just angel. Hitting us over the head with it a little bit. But, you know, we love it.
Love it.
We'll take it, Sarah. So she chose to give up that perfection for the chance to feel. And as a first-time reader, you know that she's something terrifying and powerful. Like, you know she came from somewhere yes. otherworldly and big and ominous. But this is more than we expected. Like, this feels really crazy when you're first reading it.
Yeah.
And extra crazy that she chose to become something less in order to truly live.
Yeah.
And she was another type of dreamer trapped in her own nightmare. You know, the same way that we say that Moore was a dreamer trapped in a court of mm-hmm. nightmares. And it's just another thing to tie them all together. And, you know, we will definitely get into this much more next week in our next episode, because obviously what Amryn's original form is extremely important to the ending of this book. So
Very.
Stay tuned for more on that from our religious studies professor, Anna, next week.
I can't wait. So. Yeah, you'll get Sunday school lessons with Anna for the next two episodes. So buckle up, everyone. Fair warning, go read up on your Bible.
Oh, God.
Yes, all right. So I want to pivot and chat about one of the more tender, sweet moments that happens in these books, and that's Farrah's flying lessons with Asriel. And it might seem like a really small moment in the middle of this big, massive war, but for us readers, it's absolute gold. It's the only real one-on-one time we get with Asriel in the entire book. And considering how mysterious he is, we'll take any breadcrumbs SJM can give us.
Anything.
Literally anything.
Anything at all.
He's normally so quiet and serious, but here with Feyre, we see a different side of him. He's, you know, he's patient. He has a dry sense of humor. He's a tiny bit playful with her.
Yeah. What?
What?
Asriel, give us more of this.
I know. Oh, my God. I want this.
Yes.
And it's like every smirk, every one-liner, we are eating it up. It's a softer, more grounded side of him than we've seen, right? You know, because it also harkens back to his inability, the fact that he never learned to fly. So we're seeing this more softer side of him because he understands what Feyre's going through in a very literal sense.
Exactly.
So I want to run through a couple important things from these scenes. The first is just kind of a funny, sweet moment that I forgot about when I was reading this scene, because I always think, I know that we get a bunch of history lessons with Asriel, which of course I love. But we also get this like funny moment, and it's Feyre's learning to fly, and she runs into a pine tree, like just smacks into it, and she kind of like quips back like, where did that tree come from? And Asriel's response, it's like so cool and like calm. Asriel let out a quiet laugh from where he sat atop a boulder, watching me pluck pine needles out of my hair and jacket. And then he says, judging by its size, I'd say it's been there for 200 years at least. And it's just like, and there's so many moments like this where he makes these little snarky, sassy comments. And
yeah.
We never get this, because I think when he's with Cassian and Rhysand, Cassian and Rhysand take so much of the center stage, right? Because they just have that commanding, dominating presence that really requires everyone's energy and focus. And I think Asriel is the shadow singer. He folds into the shadows. He's stealthy. He's quiet. You don't really know he's there always. And so to get, that's why the one-on-one moments and seeing this kind of like snarky side of him is so fun.
It's so fun. Exactly. I love it. And I love that it's with Feyre. I love that we get to see it here. And it really helps us then too, as the reader, understand him more and get that other little depth and layer to him that just makes us feral.
It makes us feral and it makes us hungry for what we hope is to come.
Yes.
Eventually in ACOTAR 6, you know, regardless if it's Elaine's book or whoever the focus is, I want more of Asriel.
Yes.
But this is also where Feyre gets a history lesson about Draken and the Seraphim. So Seraphim, listeners, if you forget, the Seraphim are winged fae, but their wings are feathered, which is more similar to Thessen's winged fae in his court, which also have feathered wings, whereas the Illyrians obviously have bat-like wings. Asriel goes on, he explains, you know, the Draken and Meriem's escape through the parting of the sea. Pin that for history lessons with Anna, guys. Very important.
Sunday school, it will come up.
But most importantly, he explains the Nephil philosophy, which is named after a Seraphim cartographer who ended up saving Miriam's life during the escape through the sea. And what the Nephil philosophy is, quote, what we think to be our greatest weakness can sometimes be our biggest strength, and that the most unlikely person can alter the course of history.
Ah, oh, I love that. That whole story is just beautiful.
It's so beautiful.
Little Nemo wing just always gets me.
That's what I think too, Nemo. It's the little fin.
Always gets me.
I love it.
Okay, so let's chat about Lucien and Elaine. Again, as this our recording, we now do have access to Elizabeth Evans' Audible. Mm-hmm. So we are trying to sprinkle in the new pronunciations that she has given us, one of them being Lucien. It's tough because he's Lucien in our head for 10 years, but we're trying our hardest.
We're trying our hardest.
All right, so Elaine, girl, is having a rough go. She has been very withdrawn, to say the least. And to combine that with her cryptic ramblings, yes, of worms, everyone is officially very concerned about Elaine,
yes,
including her mate, Lucien, who begs Feyre to seek out a healer for Elaine. But since Elaine is cauldron made, the healer can't find anything wrong with her or her mind. But she does say, quote, if anyone can sense if something is amiss, it's a mate. So we're going to touch on that again in a minute. But first, now that we know that Elaine wasn't just spouting off random cryptic gibberish, let's discuss some of the Easter eggs,
yes,
and like foreshadowing happening within her ramblings. So the first one that I want to pull here is when she said, I saw young hands wither with age. I saw a box of black stone. I saw a feather of fire land on snow and melt it. All right, so let's break this down. The hands, the young hands withering with age has to be the human queen.
Has to be.
Feather of fire has to be Vasa, our firebird. But what is that box of black stone, you ask? Well, in another later vision, Elaine says, quote, there is an onyx box that he possesses, more vital than anything save for them, the girls. So we can assume that this box of black stone is Koschei's box. Some people also theorize this box holds his soul, but more on that and those theories when we get to Silver Flames. All right, another warning that we get from Elaine that's so pivotal is the twin ravens. She says twin ravens are coming, one white and one black. Nobody pays attention. Everyone thinks she's Looney Tunes. But we know these are the ravens who attack Nesta and Feyre in the library.
Yes.
We know it. Now, granted, she wasn't like, they're coming in the library after you two specifically, like, don't go anywhere alone. She was very much like, ravens are coming. And they're like, birds, we can handle birds. That's fine.
We can handle
that's not
the birds.
Too scary. Like, I can go out by myself if it's just birds. But turns out it was not just birds. But she knows these things and they're inside her. And God, it's interesting. All right. So time for another mate watch, everybody, but in a different way than usual. So after Magda, our healer's suggestion, Feyre arranges a very awkward tea between Elaine and Lucien, where while there, Lucien tugs on the mating bond. He's desperate to just understand it, to see if it'll do anything to get Elaine out of this daze.
Yeah.
And he does feel it. He feels the tug, and so does Elaine. And this feeling naturally unsettles Elaine.
Yeah.
So, of course, Nesta comes rushing in, always the mother hen in a tizzy, and shuts that down real fast. But she asks Elaine what she needs. And Elaine's immediate response is sunshine. And we cannot not note that if Lucien is the heir to the day court, sunshine, all the sunshine.
All of it.
All the sunshine she wants in the day court. Very interesting.
And it's even in A Court of Silver Flames, somebody notes that black is just not Elaine's color. She doesn't belong in all of this darkness. Not that Valeris is dark, but it's a different look and that it swallows her.
Exactly.
And I think of Elaine as sunshine, as flowers, as, you know, roses. And I think when she says what she needs is sunshine, I mean, at this point, we don't know that yet. But when you get that reveal at the High Lord's meeting, it's like, what? Yes, this
sunshine.
Makes sense. Sunshine.
Day.
Yes.
Now, granted, a lot of this also goes with spring, which is also interesting. However, I do think it is fascinating to think about the sunshine here and the specific phrasing of what do you need, the word need.
And she doesn't say flowers. She says sunshine. Like,
she doesn't say potatoes. She doesn't say peonies, she says.
Sunshine.
All right, so let's also just pivot here to talk about Elaine and Lucien in general, because it's so easy as the reader to be like, Elaine, Lucien's so sweet. He's trying so hard. Throw the boy a bone. Like, come on. But really, if we think about this from Elaine's perspective, if we put ourselves in her shoes, in Nesta's shoes,
yeah,
I don't
blame her. Like, I don't blame Elaine for not jumping into this whole mating bond thing with Lucien. I think it's totally fair. She was in love. She was engaged to somebody and then thrown into the cauldron, which, let's not forget, from her perspective and Nesta's, Lucien was a part of. He was there. He was complicit. He was a part of the plan to get her thrown in the cauldron.
He was standing with Ianthe and Tamlin.
Yes.
I would also be like, I'm so sorry. You are responsible for this current and my brain is not functioning at full capacity and it's your fault.
And it's your fault. I also see why Nesta is like, hell no. You were the one that did this to us.
Yeah.
Nesta's like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. And you did it to me and my sister.
Yes.
So how can I just all of a sudden be like, oh, so you say she's your mate, so all of a sudden she's yours and I can have no say or protect her? Like, no.
No.
I understand the motivations here. Yeah.
I do. You can't blame Elaine for not being overjoyed. She doesn't know him. And also, I think this is very, very important for us all to remember when we go into Akasov. This is overwhelming. Not only was she turned against her will, her and Nesta, but now they are having to face the reality of living an immortal life and having to deal with these new bodies. And yes, oh my gosh, how awful that you were turned into a beautiful immortal fae. Absolutely, like, we can all make those jokes and stuff, but it doesn't change the fact that it's trauma and that it wasn't their choice.
Yes, exactly. And the autonomy there being taken away is also the autonomy of the mate. Oh, now I belong to you?
Yes.
Like, that is the same feeling really deep down, you know?
Exactly. And I think this is going to be important for us to remember going into Akasov with Nesta and her reluctance to say the word mate, because it's the last part of her humanity that she then has to give up. Changing that word from husband to mate is, I think, a barrier. And for Elaine, I think this whole idea of matehood when she was supposed to get married, she was betrothed, is to a human who it still breaks her heart. You know, that the person that she was supposed to marry no longer can even look at her.
Yeah.
Think about the last time you had a cancel subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago, yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
And really, this is such an interesting parallel to Rhys and Feyre, because this may have been Feyre's reaction too if Rhys had claimed the bond right away, if he had kind of forced it upon her in a way. Not that Lucien's forcing it, but just even acknowledging it, making her aware of it, is a way of forcing it on her.
Yeah.
And Feyre needed that space and that choice, just like Elaine does. I think Elaine right now needs the space. She needs to make this choice for herself the same way Rhys let Feyre. And instead, she is having to deal with all this and it's being forced upon her. Like, why do you not want to have tea with him? He's very kind. In Frost and Starlight, Feyre does the whole thing with Elaine. Like, you know, he brought you a present. And Elaine's like, oh, so then he's deserving of me. That's it. You know? And like, it's valid. Like, I know that
it's been like a few weeks.
Yeah. And like, I know in Feyre's head, in our head, the mating bond's so coveted and beautiful and precious, mm-hmm. but to Elaine, it's not yet.
It's not.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we have to remember for both of them. And Feyre needed time. She was pissed when she first found out. She was pissed because he kept it a secret, but also, like, to your point, her neck snapped. She died, okay? And if Rhysand had been like, you're my mate, I think she would have looked at him like, are you, bitch, you crazy? Like,
truly.
I just died for another man.
And that's exactly the parallel here.
Yeah.
Elaine is like, I'm dealing with some trauma. I need a minute. I have voices in my head. I'm all of a sudden Faye. I can't deal with you being my mate right now. I don't know what that means. Like, I need a sec. I need a second, please. Maybe that's why she's not talking. Maybe she's like, guys, I just need you all to leave me alone.
I've got immortality to speak. I need a few days.
The mate, honestly, is at the bottom of my list. Like, that's, I've got a lot of other things going on first.
I'm hearing worms. I'm seeing feathers.
Yeah.
Like, guys, just there is enough to deal with.
Lucien, just take a seat.
Take a seat.
Oh my gosh. Okay. What else about Elaine do you want to talk about?
Speaking of the feathers and the worms, we finally get an answer to Elaine's absurd ramblings, right? That she's a seer. Yes. So Lucien says, he's looking at Elaine. Elaine's rambling. And he's like, he's very concerned. Should we? Does she need? And he kind of trails off. And it's Azriel who says, she doesn't need anything. Azriel answered without so much as looking at Lucien. Elaine was staring at the spymaster now unblinkingly. We're the ones who need. Azriel trailed off. A seer, he said, more to himself than us. The cauldron made you a seer.
Ooh.
And this goes back to what Christina read earlier with Magda the healer saying a mate can know what another mate needs, right?
100%. This is a huge, huge, huge pro in the Azriel-Elaine being together column for the Azriel-Elaine girlies.
Yes.
And I see it. I see it here that no one else is seeing this in Elaine. Elaine is looking at Azriel, and honestly, the writing choice of having him interrupt Lucien to say, I know what she needs, is interesting. I'm not going to say it's not interesting. It is. Yeah.
I know. It is. It is interesting. I mean,
yeah. We don't have to love it to think it's interesting.
We don't have to love it to think it's interesting. But anyways, I think this is going to be really fun, though, in Elaine's book, you know, with her being a seer and all of these things that she sees, because once we do get inside of her mind and she starts to, you know, see more things and she starts to try and figure out what do they mean, you know, my little detective hat is going to be sitting there with, I won't even want to turn the page. I'm going to be sitting here going, okay, what do I think this means? I'm going to be picking it apart.
Oh, Anna is going to have whole vision boards. There's going to be red string. She's like, okay, so this vision here, she said bird of flame. But here, she said worm. But here, she's talking about this. Like, she's going to just, I feel like this is going to be Anna's catnip. The idea that we're going to be seeing the visions with Elaine in her head and figuring out the puzzle together is truly a sleuth dream. It's going to be so fun for
It's going to be
Anna.
My catnip, or I'm going to go insane. One or the other, I don't know.
Hey guys, I'm here to record, eye twitching, like.
It's going to be great. Okay, so another interesting thing to note specifically about the scene with Azriel noting that she's a seer is Mor's reaction. So Mor's magic is seemingly able to recognize the truth in Azriel's words and confirms that Elaine is a seer. It says, Mor at last blinked, mouth parting. Like that magic of hers had at last solved some puzzle. Slowly, clearly, she nodded. Confirming that Elaine is a seer. Guys, it both intrigues me and enrages me.
Exactly. Mor's power, it's too inconsistent. I don't understand. If you can see the truth in his words here, why don't we use it all the time? And I get because plot. But like in the High Lords meeting later, like I don't understand. Just what is the criteria?
I always go back to that scene in Akamath where she's with the human queens and she says, my name is Morgan and my gift is truth. And I'm like, bitch, is it? like, what are you doing? And I don't understand why we all believe you.
Right. There has to be more to it. I don't believe you.
Okay. So ultimately, at the end of all of this, they realize that there is some firebird queen that they need to be in search of, Vasa. And Lucien is the one that offers to go and search for her. Since he's like, well, no one needs me.
Literally no one, especially my mates.
Especially my mates. So I'll be off now on my quest. And he looks up at Elaine. And I think eventually she turns around and he's already gone.
So this is fascinating to me. Yeah. He looks up at her. Mm-hmm. She doesn't move. And he's like, okay. And then as he's leaving, she takes a step down and he doesn't see her take the step down. And I love to think about that moment from a seer perspective. What did she see? What is she seeing that makes her take that step down? Is she trying to say goodbye because she thinks this is it? I know you're going to go live with Band of Exiles. I know this is our like last kind of moment with you here as a part of the team.
Yeah.
Is it, does she see that this is my one last chance to try because after this, our paths diverge?
Yeah.
Is she thinking like, oh, no, I see us being together later. So I want to tell you, be careful. I don't know. I feel like there's something there.
I know. And then the only other moment we get between the two of them is at the end of the book after the battle ends and they've just buried her father. And they're walking away in the woods, and Lucien, it's almost very historical romance, courtly vibes, where they're walking side by side and they don't touch, and Feyre is almost like the chaperone.
Yes,
they're walking, and Lucien just, you know, says, he calls her lady, and he's very sweet with her, and there's a smirk in her face, and she kind of smiles at him. And there is a moment where you go, okay, maybe there is something there. I mean, if we believe the mating bond is real, we're not in the camp 100%. That it's a fake mating bond. And I do think that there's something in that moment that was really sweet. And then unfortunately, we don't really get a lot more of it going forward because Lucien goes off to help Vasa. But very small moment.
Yeah, but I love it. And especially, in this context, I want to know what fueled that step down by her.
Yes.
It's so interesting. Okay, let's take a pivot. Still Elaine, but let's talk about Elaine and Azriel.
This is a very Elaine-centered episode.
It is. Okay, so friends, loves, book besties, listeners, before we get into Azriel and Elaine, we just want to like set the tone a little bit, okay? So as always, we trust SJM to take these characters where they're meant to go. And one thing she does so well is center this female empowerment and agency in her stories. So we just want to keep that spirit at the forefront as we discuss this dynamic, whether it be Azriel and Elaine, whether it be Gwyn and Azriel, whether it be any of these female characters with anyone that they choose to be with. And yes, we have not been quiet about the fact that we are firmly Team Gwynreal here at this podcast.
Yes.
We will be shouting that from the rooftops and talking about it a lot in Silver Flames. But we also have to acknowledge and want to acknowledge the very real, very meaningful moments that happen and exist between Azriel and Elaine. Because acknowledging these moments doesn't take away from the Gwyn and Azriel moments. It adds depth to the conversation and it helps us understand everyone's full emotional arcs. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're doing here, is diving into the story and enjoying these characters that we love. And we did just want to say this because we know it's a hot button topic, which has deeply divided the fandom.
Don't come for us. We are being very diplomatic here.
Yes. At the end of the day, we want all these characters to find their happiness. So yes, we have our preferences, but let's just, as a team, as a group, as book besties, try to remember there is room for thoughtful discussion without tearing anyone down or any character down.
Yes.
We're all here because we care. We're all here because we love these characters.
Yes.
So we just hope you'll join us in showing up with open hearts and thoughtful perspectives all around as we cover these couples going forward.
Yes.
Okay. So, Elaine and Azriel.
Yes.
Let's talk about some moments here. Anna, someone commented a very interesting thing on one of our reels recently on Instagram, and you went through a journey with it with Kim. Tell me about it.
I did. Somebody commented, have you looked up what Elaine is wearing in Akamath when she first meets Azriel? Well, the whole inner circle in Azriel's there. And I was like, immediately I turned to Kim and I said, well, I mean, I did just read this book, but clearly I didn't note it. And now I'm terrified to look it up and I don't think I want to know the answer.
Exactly.
But of course I did. Okay, so when they meet for the first time in Akamath, this is what's said about Elaine and what she's wearing. Elaine Rasp, nice to meet you, before hustling after her, the silk skirts of her cobalt dress whispering over the parquet floor.
So cobalt is specific.
It's very specific because it's used about 5 times, I think, in the course of Akamath. And the majority of it is spent describing Azriel siphon colors. They are a cobalt blue. Yes, cobalt is also used, I just want to note, to describe aspects of things that are happening with Rhysanna, but mostly it's used to describe Azriel siphons, and it's a very specific blue color.
It is.
Of every color, we chose cobalt blue.
It does feel specific.
It does feel specific.
Okay, another moment that we have to note, this is in Akawar. So this is when they are first brought to the townhouse, and Azriel smiles faintly at Elaine. Okay, I'm just going to read this whole thing. This is a bit of a paragraph, but just go with me here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Azriel smiled faintly. Would you like me to show you the garden? She seemed so small before him, so fragile compared to the scales of his fighting leathers, the breadth of his shoulders, the wings peeking over them. But Elaine did not balk from him, did not shy away as she nodded just once. Azriel, graceful as any courtier, offered her an arm, I couldn't tell if she was looking at his blue siphon or at his scarred skin beneath as she breathed beautiful. Color bloomed high on Asriel's golden brown cheeks, but he inclined his head in thanks and led my sister toward the back doors into the garden, sunlight bathing them. Wow, there's a lot to pick apart here. Yes. The beautiful moment, it's so sweet, especially in this quiet way that we associate with Asriel. Mm-hmm. You know, like that is something he needs, someone who is going to take a beat, notice him, notice his mannerisms and himself in the shadows and think it's beautiful.
I know. I feel like Asriel looks at Elaine and I wonder if he sees parts of his mother. I don't want to compare traumas, but obviously his mother, it was terrible how she was treated. But I do think there's aspects of Elaine, this soft side of her that maybe he saw in his mother. And I think Elaine look at him without being scared and a monster for like his scars. I think that is something that, you know what it reminds me of is when Feyre says reflection, looking back at Tamlin, not comparing Tamlin and Asriel. Don't get it twisted, guys. But what Feyre says is maybe I cave to the first person who showed me a bit of kindness.
Oh.
And I do wonder if there's a part of Asriel who hasn't had somebody to take care of. Mm. And like he says to Rhysand in Silver Flames, why am I not worthy of having one of these wonderful women? Like you have Feyre and Cassian has Nesta. And I think he wants desperately for that because Mor is certainly not giving it to him.
Yeah. I think someone like Elaine seeing him mm-hmm. as worthy is huge to him. And I do think that at the end of the day, this might be an example of SJM doing what she does best, where characters need someone at certain points in their life. I do think that possibly Elaine needs Asriel right now. And I do think that Asriel might need Elaine right now to get over Mor and have that peace and quietness and someone who is paying attention to him.
Yeah.
But is that who they ultimately end up with and need? I don't know. But maybe, perhaps, they need each other to become who they are to then be with their final person.
Yes.
And I think that might be what's happening here.
It would be beautiful to see a friendship, like a true friendship blossom.
Yeah. I would love to see that as well. Them maybe be together in some way, but then not leave hating each other. We're not going to have a Tamlin. Like we mm-hmm. leave understanding that we needed some time together and understanding we're better with other people.
Yes.
I think that would be beautiful. Okay, sorry, we do have to say, we've already said it, but another thing in this that we have to note is the if anyone can sense if something's amiss, it's a mate. Asriel does sense the seer thing first.
Yes.
All right, and then last little tidbit we want to note in the Asriel and Elaine section here is he does offer to help her to the garden again, and it says, quote, no shadows at his ear, no darkness ringing from his fingers as he extended a hand. So his shadows missing here is very interesting.
Yeah.
Is this him feeling like he can be this other type of person he wants to be? He doesn't have to be shroud in darkness. His shadows don't have to be there. We do have to note that his shadows do fade in Mor's presence and he's been, quote, in love with her for centuries. Mm-hmm. However, his shadows do other things with other people. And we're really excited to keep tracking that and the shadows' movements around people as we go forward.
I have a counter to this.
Yes.
So I wonder, to me, his shadows pulling back means he can't be himself.
Yes, I love that.
That they're hiding.
He's trying to be something else, not himself.
Right. And to me, like, but the shadows are a part of him.
He's a shadow singer.
They should be present. He's a shadow singer. What those shadows do.
What those shadows do. And you know who the shadow singer shadows sing around?
Gwyn.
So
we're just going to, we will touch upon his bonus chapter for sure when we get to Silver Flames.
Yes.
Okay. So we are going to bebop back into the plot here. We are done theorizing about Elaine for a while. So going back to one of her seer moments, talking about the ravens, that's where we're picking back up. So Feyre and Nesta are in the library helping to search for texts that can help them in the war. And things quickly take a turn when the ravens, two High Fae, who are essentially these brutal enforcers doing the King of Highburn's dirty work, they invade the library hunting for Nesta specifically. And as a reminder, the library is a sanctuary to so many of its inhabitants. So the fact that its walls are breached is a huge violation. Feyre holds them off just long enough for Nesta to escape, and then she races down into the deepest, most forbidden part of the library, the place where Bryaxis lives. And she makes a quick little bargain, which I'm going to get to in a second. So when Bryaxis is unleashed, it is absolutely terrifying. The ravens run screaming. And this is when, of course, Cassian and Rhysand eventually show up. Cassian gets there first. He runs down. It's a really sweet moment, actually, when we get to see it play back through Rhysand's mind that Cassian yes. shows up and Nesta grabs him. And she shakes him like, my sister, like, go get my sister. I love that moment with Nesta. It's another great humanizing moment that SJM weaves in and Cassian runs down there. And okay, so this is the bargain. Yes. What Bryaxis asked for is company. Send me company. Pharah goes, I opened my mouth, but then said, to eat? A laugh that made my skin crawl. To tell me of life is what Bryaxis responds.
Oh, God. Is she asking for the moon? No.
No.
Just someone to go chit-chat.
She just wants someone to talk with. And Cassian, though, later, when he finds out what she promised, is absolutely horrified. And Rhysand's like, well, I guess when anyone misbehaves, I'll just send them down to Bryaxis.
That's your punishment.
Yep. Cassian like turns white as a ghost, and Nesta basically looks at him and is like, but did you die? Like, you survived. And Cassian's response is, it wasn't trying to eat me this time. I love their dynamic. It's so funny.
Agreed. And I love Cassian being afraid of Bryaxis, this Lord of Bloodshed. It just helps shape this whole scene and scenario so well. I love it.
And the fact that he went down there despite his fear. Yeah. He went down there to save Pharah. And he's like, close your eyes, Pharah. Don't look.
Yeah, he's like, don't look.
Oh,
God. The whole dynamic there is so good and hot. And Rhys is so mad.
Oh, Rhys, God. He comes back and his hands are bloodied. Like, it was the first time we really see a mate terrified for his mate.
Yeah.
And he realizes, I didn't think rationally. Like, I should have saved one of them for Asriel to torture.
For information.
But I just went a little bloodthirst crazy.
Yeah.
For all of this happened before we were rudely interrupted by Highburn's cronies. Nesta and Pharah are actually having a very sweet bonding moment. And Nesta admits that she had no idea that Pharah didn't know how to read. And she asks Pharah, why did you never ask me or Elaine to help you? And Pharah is honest with her. And what she says is, because I doubted you would agree to help. Nesta stiffened like I'd hit her, coldness blooming in her eyes. And it, I mean, fair, Pharah, because it's not like either of your sisters really showcased an interest.
No. You called her an ignorant peasant.
Yeah.
It's really eye-opening here how Nesta truly doesn't see how her behavior affects other people.
Well, I think this is where she's starting to see it.
Yeah.
Because the next thing that happens is actually a really great conversation that they start to have, and then we get interrupted, and it's very infuriating.
God.
But Pharah says, why do you push everyone away except Elaine? And Pharah's inner monologue is, why have you always pushed me away? Some emotion gutted in her eyes, Nesta's eyes. Her throat bobbed. Nesta shut her eyes for a moment, breathing in sharply. Because, and this is where the ravens show up.
God damn it!
And you're just like, what? What were you going to say, Nesta? Like, was this going to be our breakthrough moment?
This was it!
Now we have to go through all of Silver Flames.
Truly. The fact that she gave us the because and then got cut off feels like such a tease.
I know. But I really love these sweet moments. And it does feel like Pharah and Nesta are both using their relationship with Elaine specifically as their bonding.
Yes.
Moment. The crutch of their relationship is Elaine because it's what they can mutually agree. Like, Elaine might be crazy now, so we have to watch out for her.
100%.
And that's how they bond.
Yes. It's their one thing they have in common right now that they both feel strongly about. And it's a safe topic for them.
Yes, exactly. It's a safe topic.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are going to pivot and we move to the Battle of Adriada, which is when Highburn very sneakily attacked the Summer Court in a brutal way. And everybody is freaking out because this is basically the start of the war. And so it's pure chaos. Mor and Pharah are battling in the Summer Court Palace while the High Fae of the Summer Court are scrambling to escape. And they're not helping. They're leaving the Lesser Fae, the servants, the workers, behind. And Mor and Pharah don't hesitate. They stay to help fight and protect them. And for Pharah, it's her first real test in battle. There's no planning. Like I said, it was an ambush. And so it's messy. It's chaos. Yes. And she's just running on instinct and all of the training that Cassian has instilled in her. Meanwhile, out at sea, Rhysand is on the battleships facing what appears to be the King of Highburn, but it turns out is just a projection, an illusion meant to threaten and distract everyone. But still, Rhysand doesn't hold back. And for the first time, we really see the full scale of his power. He mists everyone. Basically a snap of his fingers and it's just red mist. Everybody disappears.
It's such an effective storytelling moment because yes. At that point, there was a damper on everyone's power. No one could use their full power. And
exactly.
All of a sudden, the second that's taken away, you understand just how powerful Rhysand is in this moment. And we have seen it before, but something about the way this is written is so powerful.
Very powerful. And so when the battle finally settles and Summer Court has regained control and they've pushed Highburn out, Feyre and Moor set off to go find Tarquin. And they do, they find him in his war room. And Feyre offers, you know, she's like, I'm offering to keep an Illyrian legion here to help you, to watch out in case Highburn decides to come back and attack again. And Tarquin is still pretty angry and bitter about the fact that Feyre and Rhysand lied to him in Akamath, you know, to steal the book. And he's just not quick to trust them at their word. So Feyre just looks at him and she's very stern and delivers, tend to your wounded, Tarquin. And then asks him, and please come to the High Lords meeting that they've sent notices out. And Tarquin turns to Rhysand and suggests basically to let his mate know not to give other High Lords orders. And what Rhysand's response is, it is so good. She is High Lady of the Night Court. She may do as she wishes.
Yes! I love it.
It's a really great moment because this is the first time Rhysand is laying it all out there in front of everyone. She is High Lady and she can do as she fucking wishes.
Exactly. I love that moment. And then they winnow out. He like kisses her forehead and then it's like, bam. And she just looks back and everyone's shocked. And then they're out of there.
Yeah, it's so amazing. Good. But this specific battle and how Tarquin sees them is why Feyre brings up to Rhysand that I think we should remove our masks at the High Lords meeting. I think everybody needs to see who we really are, not the villains that everybody thinks that we are. And she says, we'll show them the court of dreams.
Beautiful.
I love it.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
But there's also this really sweet moment between Feyre and Rhysand, and Feyre says, I love you. His head lifted, eyes churning. There was a time when I dreamed of hearing that, he murmured, when I never thought I'd hear it from you. He gestured to the tent, to Adriana beyond it. Our trip here was the first time I let myself hope. And then as she remembers, to the stars who listen and the dreams that are answered. And yet today with Tarquin, and then what she says is, the world should know how good you are, Rhysand, how wonderful all of you are. And it's just such a sweet moment. And I love that so much.
And it's true. And he needed to hear that from her to make this decision. He was never going to think himself worthy enough, think that his good side was worthy enough that it would make a difference to people.
Yeah.
And having her say it, I think just is so beautiful. I love that. It's
so
good.
I love it so much.
Okay. So next up, let's talk about Cassian and Nesta. Oh,
yay.
Always so fun. We get a new mate watch moment.
I love a mate watch.
Guys, we love a mate watch. It's just slowly, progressively getting more and more obvious. It's a steady rise of mate watch moments until we get to Silver Flames. All right. So when everyone gets back from the battle at Adriata, They all went into the townhouse, except for Cassian, because he is off visiting the families of the fallen soldiers. Now, listen to this quote. Nesta was glancing between us all, her back still stiff, mouth a thin line. Where is he? Who? Rhys crooned. I love the idea of him being like, "Who, Nesta? Tell me.
Who do you want?"
I don't think he said it like that, but in my mind, he's like, "Who?"
Yeah. It's so funny.
Okay, who? Rhys crooned. Cassian. I didn't think I'd ever heard his name from her lips. Cassian had always been him or that one. And Nesta had been pacing in the foyer as if she was worried. Oh, God, she was worried. It's this moment where Feyre is picking up on this. And so you as the reader are like, this is not just in my head. Validation.
Validation.
She's worried. Oh, and then later he does return and she sees him for the first time. Also a huge moment. Quote, "Hello, Nesta." Rhys seemed to halt his winnowing as my sister said, "So you're alive." Cassian bared his teeth in a feral grin, wings flaring slightly. Were you hoping otherwise? Mor was watching so closely every muscle tense. She again reached for his arm because she's about to winnow him away. She again reached for his arm, but Cassian angled out of reach, not tearing his eyes from Nesta's blazing gaze. Nesta blurted, "You didn't come to..." She stopped herself. The world seemed to go utterly still at that interrupted sentence. Nothing and no one more so than Cassian. He scanned her face as if furiously reading some battle report. Mor just watched as Cassian took Nesta's slim hand in his own, interlacing their fingers.
Oh my God.
As he folded in his wings and blindly reached his other hand back toward Mor in a silent order to transport them. Cassian's eyes did not leave Nesta's, nor did hers leave his. There was no warmth, no tenderness on either of their faces, only that raging intensity, that blend of contempt and understanding and fire. Rhys began to winnow us again, and just as the dark wind swept in, I heard Cassian say to Nesta, his voice low and rough, "The next time, emissary, I'll come say hello."
Oh!
Good. Guys, this is everything.
Oh, I love it. And I also love the way that they're described as this raging inferno and how different that is from Feyre and Rhysand, where it's like a slow smolder and like it, the flames kind of like, you know, have to be fed. And whereas Cassian and Nesta are just like right there. And like it says, a raging intensity, that blend of contempt and understanding and fire, like, they are both warriors. Nesta right now is not in the sense of that Cassian is a warrior. She hasn't picked up a sword, but she is so fierce and powerful that, of course, we don't know just how powerful she is yet, but she is so powerful and there is so much anger and rage inside of her. And I think it's why they just work, because Cassian sees that. And he's like, "Let's go. I'm here."
It matches him so well and compliments him so well. And he sees this in her where everyone else just sees her as a bitch. Everyone else sees her as just having walls up. And he sees the little nooks and crannies within those walls. And it's so beautiful. I love what you said about how it's just this raging inferno. Yeah. It's so them. And I do want everyone to pen Mor's reaction here. Everything with Cassian's dynamic with Mor in this exact moment. I don't know when we're going to be able to break it down. Probably not till Frost and Starlight, but stay tuned because we really want to talk about this and this dynamic as a whole where it comes to Mor's reactions to Nesta. But there's a lot going on. We got to just keep focused on Akawar, but I promise we'll get there. Okay, so another mate watch moment that we just want to call out really quickly. This is going to be in High Lord's meeting, but we got to say it here with mate watch. So Baron, just the awful... horrible
trash
person that he is, freaking trash, is of course being an asshole in the High Lord's meeting, as he always is. And he says to Cassian, "I don't take orders from bastards." And Nesta fucking claps back and says, "That bastard," Nesta said with utter coolness, though her eyes began to burn like an inferno, quote, "may wind up being the only person standing in the way of Highburn's forces and your people." God, it's good. I love that Nesta stands up for Cassian in this moment to Baron, to a high lord of the Autumn Court. And it's something Cassian needs in his inner soul, because he agrees with people when they say that he's a low-born Illyrian brute.
Bastard,
And not only having someone defend him, But having his mate, which he doesn't know yet, but he like has to know as well,
kind suspects. Of. Yes.
Do that for him. It's just, I think that means tenfold so much more to him than if anyone else had said it.
Yes, I agree. I think it is such an important moment for the two of them. And also Nessa showcasing that, like, I might be a bitch and I might call things out to him, but nobody else is allowed to be a bitch to him. Like, he, like, no.
He might be a bastard, but he's my bastard.
He's my bastard.
I can call him that and you can't.
I love it so much. And while we're on the subject of Nesta, before we get into the High Lords meeting, there's a really beautiful growth moment that happens here with Nesta right before they leave. She appears, she's all decked out in her classic Nesta demure fashion, and she asks if she can go. And she has historically said, like, I'm not a part of this. But this is after the Battle of Adriana. This is after she didn't know if Cassian was safe or not.
And after she asked Feyre, why did you go fight? And Feyre said, it's the right thing to do. And she said also in the library, why did you sacrifice yourself for me? Why did you fight? And she's like, well, you're my sister. Yeah. I think she's seeing this behavior from Feyre and she's realizing, why can't I do that? Back in the day when they lived in that cottage, she was so angry that she wanted her father to step up and do something and he didn't, but this is her time to step up and do something.
She doesn't want to be her father.
Yeah.
Yes. So this is the quote. Nesta lifted her chin. And then she kind of stumbles over her words. I do not want to be remembered as a coward. And Feyre says, no one would say that. I would, Nesta says. Nesta surveyed us all, her gaze jumping past Cassian, not to slight him, but avoid answering the look he was giving her. Approval. More. It was some distant thing, she said. War, battle. It's not anymore. I will help if I can, if it means telling them what happened. You went off to battle for a court you barely know, who barely see you as friends. Aemryn showed me the blood ruby, and when I asked you why, you said it was because it was the right thing to do. People needed help. No one is going to fight to save the humans beneath the wall. No one cares. But I do. She toyed with the fold in her dress. I do.
Oh, I love this.
It's such a beautiful Nesta moment because she's so harsh and she's so cold and she's all of these things. And my God, we take a giant leap forward in this book only to really fall backward in the novella and then in the beginning of Akasoff. But it's these glimpses that Sarah puts in here. And there are so many more and we get into the final parts of this book. But Sarah is so smart to give us these little breadcrumbs of what Nesta has the possibility to become. And that's what makes her complete emotional breakdown so much harder because we see where she could be. And then when she's so harsh and nasty in the beginning of Akasoff, it's like, it's so much harder to read.
Exactly. So well said. Yeah. Yes. I love this. I love her not only recognizing this, but saying it out loud. That is, this is a huge growth moment. And as she's about to keep having growth moment when she says she is vulnerable in front of the High Lords. Mm. Okay, so speaking of the High Lords meeting, guys, buckle up.
Get on that magic school
bus.
Here we go.
We're going to the meeting of the year, everybody. Everybody sent their RCPs in except Tam Tam, and here we are. All right, this is one of the most anticipated moments in Akka War, and boy golly, does it deliver. But we do also want to give a friendly reminder that we have a full dedicated SJM series episode on this over on Patreon, and we also cover it in depth in our original Akka War coverage back in season 2. So for today, we're going to focus on our biggest moments from these chapters and a brief overall view of our favorite lines, favorite quotes, and the takeaways. So to start off, here's a little overview of this wild and crazy meeting. All 7 High Lords, most of whom barely tolerate each other, are crammed into one, albeit beautiful, room in the Dawn Court to try and form an alliance against Highburn, and it's basically just a diplomatic battlefield. Right from the start, it's clear that no one's on the same page. Tarquin is still furious with Rhys and Feyre for stealing the Book of Breathings from the Summer Court. Baron is his grumpy, awful self from the Autumn Court, just smug and awful as ever. Helion, truly the High Lord of the Day Court, is honestly a delight. He's a blast. He's got charisma. I also love later when he's like, oh, I thought we were wearing our mean masks. Guys, I didn't get the memo. You should have told me we're doing masks off today. I was being mean. And later, we find out he's actually, dun dun dun, Lucien's secret actual father. Plot twist. I'm obsessed with this. There's also a lot to unpack there with him and the threesome and the stuff. It's just, God, it's delicious. Okay, and then we have Theseon from the Dawn Court, who is quiet and thoughtful and very focused on the facts and unsuccessfully trying to keep everyone focused on the matter at hand. And of course, we have Callias of the Winter Court, who keeps mostly to himself, still cautious after Amarantha's rule, but his wife Vivian is absolutely an unexpected treat. Really steals the show.
I love her.
Okay, Rhysand makes his mask-off debut entrance, still with maximum drama, bringing Feyre as High Lady, which immediately throws everyone off, including Vivian, who says, "Why can't I be High Lady?" It's so good.
I love her. All right.
She's so good, and I love her and Callias' story. God, I love them.
It's
okay,
so, good.
So Feyre sitting at this table as his equal sets the tone. Things have changed, and you know who's not on board? Timaeus. So Tamlin, of course, is furious, and his entrance is pure chaos. He accuses Rhys and Feyre of manipulating him, blames them for everything, and ultimately tries to derail this entire meeting to turn everyone against the Night Court. But Feyre holds her ground beautifully, shutting him down with grace and power. And ultimately, Tamlin comes off looking like a petty child, wanting everyone to care more about his hurt ego and his Jerry Springer drama than the war at hand. So, yes, the meeting itself is a hot mess, but despite all the arguing, some real alliances start to take shape. And even though it's fragile, it is something, friends. So, whew, let's run through some of our most famous quotes from this scene, starting, oh God, with Tamlin himself.
Oh Lord, I seriously can't with this quote you're about
to
read.
The rage I feel every time I read these lines, it never goes away however many times I read this scene. Mm-hmm. It is so awful. How desperate and petty he is. This is his worst side, just on full display.
It really is.
It's so bad. I remember vividly where I was the first time I read this scene. So, Rhysand says, quote, "I'm not in business of discussing our plans with enemies." "No," Tamlin said with equal ease. "You're just in the business of fucking them." How very dare you, sir?
Like, take several seats.
My God. He comes in and every single thing he says, he can't let it go. It's like a vial. He just like jabs.
No,
he's
just digging the hole deeper and deeper and deeper.
And it's the juxtaposition of Rhys trying to really like focus on the matter at hand, trying to be mask off, trying to be civil, even with Tamlin, who he hates so much. And Tamlin is just being such a petty child. He's just jabbing and saying these vile things. And it's just, he tries to bring everything back to them. And he says, quote, another one, "If you hadn't stolen my bride away in the night, Rhysand, I would not have been forced to take such drastic measures to get her back." Feyre's response to this, iconic, quote, "The sun was shining when I left you." Yes!
She's like, "I'm laying this on the table. I wasn't stolen. He didn't take me against my will. I left you. I also sent you a note, asshole, and said I was fine."
Yeah. And she does later say, "You don't get to rewrite the narrative. You don't get to do that here." And I love that. Yeah. She's standing up for that.
No, I feel like at this point, they're mates, first of all. So that in and of itself should be enough. Feyre seems happy. She told you she was happy. I understand why, if you believe that the Night Court is actually truly evil, and if you got this note, sure, maybe you might be like, oh, this was a manipulation. Oh, she wrote this under duress. But no, Lucien then saw her in Akamath. Then again, when they're in Hive, before he turns the sisters. Then she leaves you again in the beginning of Akawar. Like, dude, when someone says you're dead, it's time to lie down. Like, give it up. It's done.
Yeah. But that's the thing. At this point, I don't even think he wants her back.
No.
He's just so bitter and hurt. And I really think a lot of this is some of that toxic masculinity there. How dare she do this to me? How dare anyone not want me?
Yeah.
And there's also the history with him and Rhys. There's so much happening here. And he cannot see past it to deal with the matters at hand. He just brings everything back to them.
I want to pivot here and discuss one of our favorite Asriel moments. There's a couple. But
yes.
It kicks off with one of Tamlin's worst lines. It says, "Tamlin only angled his head at Rhys. When you fuck her, have you ever noticed that little noise she makes right before she climaxes?" And this is, Feyre says, this is a systematic annihilation of my character. Like, this is all to make me feel and look like an idiot and to embarrass me. And before anybody can say anything, what is written is, "But it was Asriel who said, his voice like cold death, 'Be careful how you speak about my High Lady.'"
Bam!
That ownership of like, that's my High Lady you're speaking to, and I will fuck you up.
And from Asriel, our man of few to no words.
It's so good.
It's so good.
I know. And then we have another one where Aerys is being such a little shit. I mean, honestly, he's wearing his asshole mask, which we know he has to do because he's in front of his father and his brothers and he has to play the part. But my God, he makes it really hard.
We are rooting for you to have a redemption arc. This does not bode well.
I know. And it's, and I get it. I get it. If he doesn't play it well enough, Baron could distrust him and have him killed. But the words are really hard to swallow. Yep. And so what he says to Mor, he looks at her and he says, "Good to know that after 500 years, you still dress like a slut." That word.
Yeah, the word choice.
Mm-hmm. So he says that to Mor, and the next thing that's written is, "One moment Azrael was seated, the next he'd blasted through Aerys' shield with a flare of blue light and tackled him backwards, wood shattering beneath them." Shit, Cassian spat.
Oh my God, so much here. Azrael, who is always a shadow, like never actually in this setting, gonna be the first one to start a physical fight. And he tackles him backwards.
And it's like whatever magic he possesses, whatever makes him a shadow singer, he's able to break through the wards that are there to like stop the magical fighting. And he attacks Aerys. And then I love the Cassian being like, shit, God damn it. Shit. Oh, fuck. And then it's so all this good. Because it's Feyre who gets up and she walks over and she puts her hand on Azrael's shoulder and she says, "Come, Azrael." And he like lowers his magic and it's like she's the only one that can break through to him because Mor is sitting there frozen like a ice pop. She's just like not moving. She's like not moving.
Yeah, but Rhys, his High Lord, has said, "Azrael, enough."
Yeah.
And he didn't, nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
And it feels almost like a parallel than the moment earlier in the book where they're on the ice plane and she has Cassian and Azrael halt, stop attacking Aerys and his brothers. And they listen to her without question.
Yes.
They just do exactly what their High Lady asks of them. And it's very similar here, but in such a different stakes, but also high stakes. It's beautiful.
And I love that she brings him over. She brings him a glass of water and it's just this beautiful moment. And they look at her like, "Why are you waiting on him? He's supposed to be your servant," or whatever. And she's like, "This is my family.
Exactly.
Don't fuck with my family.
Don't fuck with them. They are my family. And I don't look at him like you look at people who are under you in hierarchy." And it's another mask off moment. It's important for mask off.
It really, really is. And then, you know, obviously it really spooks Mor. Like I said, she's sitting there frozen. Rhysand points out to Feyre later that Mor gets spooked when Azrael shows these big signs of affection. But we will unpack that later.
Yeah.
Think about the last time you had a cancel subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores. You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Christina, will you take us to a big moment with Rhysand?
Oh, yes. Daddy's mad. Okay, so another hugely important moment is when we see Rhys unleash this power. All right, he's got his mask off. He's trying to be nice and show that he's not the scary monster that he's had to pretend to be. but don't you mess with Feyre, darling. Okay, so Tamlin takes it one step too far and Rhys goes off. This is from Tamlin. Quote, "Why would I want spoiled goods returned to me? My cheeks heated," Tamlin growled, "the moment you let him fuck you like an..." One heartbeat, the poisoned words were spewing from his mouth, where fangs lengthened, then they stopped. Tamlin's mouth simply stopped emitting sounds. He shut his mouth, opened it, tried again, no sound. Not even a snarl came out. There was no smile on Rhysand's face, not a glint of that irreverent amusement as he rested his head against the back of his chair. "The gasping fish look is a good one for you, Tamlin." God, I love it. "The others, who had been watching with disdain and amusement and boredom, now turned to my mate, now possessed a shadow of fear in their eyes as they realized who and what exactly sat among them. Brethren, and yet not. Tamlin was a high lord as powerful as any of them, except for the one at my side. Rhys was as different from them as humans were to Fae. They forgot it sometimes, how deep that well of power went, what manner of power Rhys bore. But as Rhysand ripped away Tamlin's ability to speak, they remembered."
Oh, God. It's so fun to see these moments of his power. Like we see it in Adriana with the misting, but then this where it's like a casual, he barely lifts a finger. And it's just like, stop talking, Tamlin.
And it's moments like this that even harken back to the first book, the quiet power, the juxtaposition of their two powers. Tamlin is literally snarling with fangs lengthening out of his mouth. Mm-hmm. And Rhys lays his head back in his chair, and the quiet ease of his power is so much scarier, so much more impactful, so much more, just more. It's so fun to read. Oh, my God.
I love it.
Also important to note as we think about mask off moments here, two mask off wins that we get are Callias, who accepts that Rhys did not have anything to do with the murdering of the children of the Winter Court. He and Vivian believe him, and that is good. We're moving past that.
Yes.
But also important to note, a mask off win from Tarquin as well, who acknowledges that the Night Court was the only court to come to their aid when they were attacked by Highburn. So he officially rescinds the Blood Rubies and says there's no debts.
Yes.
So those are big wins for
big wins.
Yeah.
For Team Night Court. Okay, I want to pause here and have a little Feyre conversation.
Yeah.
So I was not here for the beginning of Akawar when she seeks her revenge in the beginning of the book. But I want to read this quote from Tamlin. So it starts with, "You primed my court to fall," Tamlin said, "with venomous quiet. And it did. Those villages you wanted so badly to help rebuild, they're nothing more than cinders now." So I want to talk about Feyre's takedown of the Spring Court. I know you guys have already touched upon this, but this is the moment where I think Feyre is finally told to her face. Listen, you did things, and we are rooting for her, right? I remember reading it for the first time and being like, yeah, girl, get it. It's amazing. And then I've reread it, and it's pretty morally complex what she does.
Yes.
You know, it's very short-sighted. We're taking out the villains. We're taking out Ianthe. We're taking out Tamlin. And yes, Ianthe is a true villain. Tamlin is complicated. But she ends up wrecking an entire court in the process. Mm. Innocent people, farmers, soldiers, workers, they're the ones that are left in limbo here. There's no leadership. There's no protection. Feyre technically, quote unquote, wins, but it's not a clean victory. And I feel like that's not talked about enough when people have these conversations surrounding the book. And it's because we don't hate Feyre, you know? It's just that it is morally complex, that she doesn't think about what the long game is here. And I also never thought about this before, but is there a gendered lens here? Because if a man did this, is it the same thing? Like, there's so many movies and books where it's the man who's coming in, he's seeking revenge, and it's done through bloodshed and a sword. And this was quiet, almost a more of a manipulation and systematic, like, annihilation of the court. And
yes,
I feel like in some ways, because it's not bloody, it seems dirtier.
Oh, interesting. Yes.
This is not normally how you would see a man take it down. This is like a woman's game. And I wonder if that's why, you know, just kind of calling myself out, does it hit that way because she is a woman? But like, would I say it if there was bloodshed and there was a man, you know?
Yeah, like if Rhys had come in and was just like, I'm getting Feyre back, we're going to war.
Yes.
And I think Rhys is an interesting example because I do think we see this behavior from Rhys. I think Rhys would have done this. He did it Under the Mountain with Amarantha.
True.
Double agent situation.
Very true.
As well, Jurian is a double agent situation, taking things down from the inside parallel. But we don't see them being as short-sighted. We don't see the long-term repercussions for innocent people from those double agent games.
Because we're not getting their POV too. But also, Rhysand, that's a great point. I hadn't thought about that because Rhysand does play those mind games under the mountain, obviously. And we do question some of his behavior. Kim and I, when we broke down the ending with the dancing and all of that, like we did question that. It's a morally gray, complex area that he does. And
yeah.
And he says he has his reasons, and because you're in Feyre's mind and you fall in love with Rhysand, we trust those reasons, and we're in Feyre's mind, and she's taking down the Spring Court, and we're like, rah, rah, yay. But to Tamlin's point, it's like, what did you think was going to happen? You took me down, but you took down my entire court. You remember, she also systematically had all the soldiers, all of his sentinels, not trust him by the end. So who would fight and defend those people? They're like, you can't even rule us.
Exactly. It is so much fun, but when it comes down to it, she was not prepared for this. She is not 500-year-old double agent Jurian or Rhys.
True.
She was not prepared enough to be this level double agent. She was thrown in, and her revenge blinded her from playing the game as effectively as she could have.
Yeah. And that's what revenge is. Revenge does that. That's what it does.
Yeah.
But I also think that this is what makes her story so compelling, right? She's not a perfect heroine. Neither is Rhysand.
No.
It's messy. And that's honestly, though, what makes them so interesting to read, though, is that we have to grapple with these things. And they're human and they make mistakes. And
100%.
That's okay.
Well, Faye.
Yes.
But I.
Yes. But it humanizes them.
Exactly. Yes. And honestly, I love that she put this in here. I think Sarah could have just not had this line from Tamlin. Mm-hmm. We as the reader could have just kind of forgotten about the villagers and forgotten about the long-term repercussions of the Spring Court and lived in the revenge era fun.
Yeah.
But I like that she's making us think about it too.
I do too. And, you know, at the end of the day, it is war times. So
it is war times, people.
We are doing things and sometimes it's not a great decision, but it is the one you made. And so you got to see it through. So
you got to make hard decisions sometimes when you're Slytherins in war times.
All right, Christina.
Okay, another big moment for Feyre here. So Baron is Baron, and he calls Rhys a whore for like the fifth time and starts to suggest that Rhys may spread his legs for Highburn. He takes it far too far. And in this moment, Feyre shows really the strength of her magic for the first time, and in the process reveals that she does possess a little bit of all seven of the High Lords' magic.
It's supposed to be a secret going into this meeting, but...
Which was really like the big thing. We can take our masks off, but let's not tell them that you have all the magics.
Yes.
Like, let's hold that one to our chest.
Yeah.
But so, Baron says this awful thing to Rhys and quote, I stopped hearing the words, stopped hearing anything other than my heart, my breathing. Fire exploded out of me, raging, white, hot flame that blasted into Baron like a lance and sent a wave of water through the reflection pond to encircle Baron in his chair, a bubble without air. Flame pounded against it, turning water to steam. But I pushed harder. I'd kill him and gladly be done with it. You've proved your point, my love, Rhys said. Kill him and horrible Aerys will take his place. Then I'll kill all of them, she says mind to mind. He says, as interesting an experiment as that might be, Rhys crooned, it would only complicate the matters at hand. Into my mind, he whispered, I love you. The words of that hateful bastard don't mean anything. He has nothing of joy in his life, nothing good. We do.
Oh
God, sweet, wise Rhysand.
Rhysand.
I love this, and I love that Tamlin is watching this. One, he is seeing her use this power that he was content to just let her hide and push down. He is seeing what immense amount of power she has, and then he is seeing this sweet, gentle, amazing, patient, and supportive behavior from Rhysand.
Yeah.
You proved your point, my love. And they look at each other, and I have to think, you know, they're speaking mind to mind. And then the sweetness and gentleness there, it's so beautiful. And I love that everyone's seeing it. I think it's a great mask off moment for everyone.
Yeah, I agree.
Everyone gets a little focused on her having all the power. But, you know, I also love how Callias here is like, well, you didn't do mine. Did you learn mine too?
Yeah.
Did you get mine? What about
Where's
me?
Mine? She's like, yes, I mastered them all.
She's like, okay, just making sure I'm involved.
Yeah.
although this was really unfortunate because she shouldn't have told them all, and Baron and everyone's like, you stole my magic. You didn't notice it was gone. Yeah. It's like a fish scale.
She was like, it was a gift and it's mine now. So
exactly. And I'm going to use it to take down Highburn. And if you are worried about a kernel of your magic being gone, then you are focused on the wrong things, you horrible man. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So where we are going to leave off this episode is with a really important moment with Nesta. She senses something is off the evening after the first meeting, and she can't quite put her finger on what it is, but she knows something is wrong. Cassian, of course, doesn't doubt her for a second, but Asriel and his spies can't detect any issues. So day two of the meeting continues until Nesta falls to the ground and starts retching. Rhysand uses whatever crazy type of like power he possesses to spear across Prithian, basically, and then announces to the room, we were too late, too slow. Highburn just destroyed the wall.
Oh.
And that's how basically the High Lords meeting wraps up, is with that moment and them all realizing, well, shit, the fight is at our doorstep. We're at war and now it's go time. And so that's where we're going to leave off this week's episode. And we're going to pick up right after that next week. But before we sign off this episode, we are going to move into our mastermind section. So welcome to our favorite little corner where we peel back the curtain and all the brilliant foreshadowing, plot threads, and Easter eggs Sarah J. Maas has been planting since page one. A quick spoiler warning from here on out. In addition to ACOTAR, we will be referencing the entire Throne of Glass and Crescent City series. So if you have not finished those yet, cheers and happy reading. We will see you next time. And if you're all caught up, let's dive in.
Whoop, whoop!
Whoop, whoop! All right, so the first thing I want to talk about is Rhysand and Aelin and kind of how they're both secret keepers. Because Rhysand in this part of the book, when they're in the Hewn City, you know, we see for the first time him kind of have to play the High Lord. And he has to making deals behind the scenes. And it's very similar to what Aelin does. And it's one of the things that frustrates the people closest to her the most, is the secret keeping, is Aelin's reluctance to allow others in on her secrets and what she's planning. And I think where I don't think Rhysand is as bad as Aelin is in that sense, this is a moment, though, where Rhysand kind of took the reins and made a deal without really getting anyone else's approval, because that's his prerogative as the High Lord. And, you know, what Amarin says to him later is, yes, you made the right call. You played it well, but you also played it badly. And you should have trusted us. But I just, an interesting similarity is like when Adian's like, where are our armies, Aelin? Like, where are they? And then sure enough, up they roll, but it's too late because Aelin's being taken off in an iron coffin.
Oh, and it's brutal. But it's exactly that feeling, though, of the inner circle and the cadre, and just trust us to help you. You don't have to carry all this alone. Yeah. Like, let us in so that we can help you. I think Rhysand in this example was trying to fix it before it was even a problem.
Exactly.
But still, the parallel is there that he didn't tell anyone. Mm-hmm. And it's him behind the scenes being the puppet master, not wanting to put that on everyone else, when really everyone would love to be in on these things to help.
Well, what the deep underlying fear here, I think, for Rhysand throughout the book, more not even just here in the Hewn City this moment, but what he talks to Feyre about is, I will give everything. I will give every piece of myself before anybody else has to suffer. And Aelin is the same way, because she will not have another Sam. She will not have another Marion moment. She is like, I will give and give and give. And she does in Kingdom of Ash. She gives up her human side and she gives up her magic so that she can save and lock the keys up. I will suffer so that nobody else has to. And that they're both have this savior complex. And
exactly.
It's Cassian who says later, like, let us help you. Let us be there for you, Rhysand.
And like I think I mentioned earlier in this episode, Rhys on the roof later telling Feyre, this is why I take everything on myself. More crying today is why the both of them would rather honestly die than one of their people hurt. And it's hard.
It is hard.
But God, does it make a good, so good plot.
And also, just before we move on to this really fun little other theory, while we're on the subject of Aelin, because we had just talked about Feyre being not perfect, it's Aelin and Bryce. And people get so frustrated with Aelin, and I understand. She is frustrating at times. I would honestly say Feyre of the three of them is probably the least hard to deal with. You know, Bryce has all of this grief and things that really kind of make her snarky in the beginning of Crescent City. And Aelin obviously has so many trust issues and she's so angry. But the three of them, that's what makes Sarah's writing so fun, or why I find her main female character so compelling to read, is because they're not perfect. And it's so boring if they were perfect.
Agreed. I love to see them each make bad calls.
Yeah.
All three of them sometimes make a bad decision, or they don't think about the repercussions, yeah, or something bad happens because of a cause and effect of something they did, and they have to grapple with, yes, that. And I think we see it more with Aelin and Bryce because they're like kind of in charge more. Mm-hmm. They have more big decisions to make than Feyre, yeah, does. But she does make those decisions in the Spring Court, and that's when we see,
exactly,
it.
Exactly, yeah.
So another fun, just little parallel here, is when we think about Feyre's crown of stars. Guys, there are so many crowns of stars in Throne of
Glass. There
are. I can't even tell you. When I started going through this, I was like, oh, good Lord. So none of them are exactly the same. There's differences in each of them. Mm-hmm. But God, it's such a fun parallel. Okay, so we have Manon's crown, which is the Kraken crown. We also have Mab's crown is described as a crown of stars. And Elena's crown is described as a crown of stars. It is so fun, these different crowns of stars on these different women used in different spaces and times,
yeah,
and just that fun little parallel between them and what they bring about,
yeah,
in the storytelling. It's so fun.
I love when she does that. I mean, who's to say what it means? I don't think it necessarily means anything. It's just like fun how she ties in all these different little moments.
Yeah.
The final little mastermind one, which is really fun. We've actually talked about this in one of our Crescent City Theories episodes before CC3 came out. But this is a quote from when they are in the Hewn City, when Kier is leaving the meeting with Rhysand. What he says is, Lord Thanatos is having difficulties with his daughter again. Now, Thanatos, that name, is one of the princes of hell in Crescent City. We have dialogue with him, okay?
Yes.
This is really important because, of course, we did a deep dive on this. Thanatos is the god of death in Greek mythology. He is the god of death, while the, I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, but it's like, Erinys, they're his like children of sorts. They are called the Furies, okay?
Fury! Right,
so Thanatos, god of death, he has these Erinys, also known as Furies. They are goddesses of vengeance, particularly for crimes against families or oaths. While they are not directly related as parent and child, like Thanatos and the Furies, they are in all accounts, though, basically described as the daughters of Thanatos, okay? So it seems weird for SJM to use the same name for a character in two different series. I'm not sure if they're one and the same, but like it's very odd that that is such an interesting name. And the fact that Thanatos is a prince of hell and then we have a character named Fury.
And we don't know Fury's origin, and we know it's something really wild because Danica sent it and they had this,
yes,
pact then that she wouldn't tell anyone. It is huge here. Just even the little
the
sliver
littlest thing
of hope.
Because Danica was a bloodhound, everyone, if you don't remember. So she can sense,
yes,
a person's lineage by smelling them. And Fury made her promise not to say what. Like, what if Fury is like, what is she?
I think that's what it is. I think this is why this is fun to latch onto, because we just are dying for anything about Fury.
Yes.
And Sarah, using the name again, feels so annoyingly specific for Lord that she could have picked any other name to throw into,
yeah,
Avatar. Lord Thanatos. Like, it's so fun.
I love it so much.
Yes, I think there's a lot of realistic issues with them being one and the same.
Yeah.
But also, it's fun.
It is fun.
It's fun.
You can't deny that those are very unique names. It's not like Fred.
Yes.
Okay?
Not a Henry. No.
It's Thanatos. And when you look up the meaning behind the name, that's what's so interesting to me. Like the origin.
Difficulties with his daughter.
And Thanatos' daughters are the Furies. Like, come on.
Oh, I love it.
What does that mean?
I love it. Yeah.
So that is where we're going to leave off this episode. And next week, we'll pick up with the beginning of our final parts of Akawar. So,
woo!
Yeah. Cheers and happy reading, listeners.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, friends, that wraps up another episode of Flights of Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to join our book club community on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, where you can share your thoughts, theories, and favorite moments with us and fellow listeners. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your support Smart helps us spread the magic of romanticy to even more book lovers. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep reading, and remember, every good story deserves to take flight.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.